Hello, tech fans, and welcome into episode 150 of the Tech Sideline podcast, originating from TSL's High Tech Studios in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. On today's episode, I ask Will and Chris the simple question: can Virginia Tech bounce back from a disappointing loss against Liberty and now playing number 9 Miami this weekend? Plus, we finally talk a little bit of Virginia Tech basketball towards the end of the show. It's a milestone podcast, episode 150 of the Tech Sideline podcast. Get started right now. It is great to have you with us as we welcome you back into the Tech Sideline podcast, whether you are watching live or archived on YouTube, listening on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher. So glad you could join us today as we record on Thursday afternoon, November the 12th. We've got our general manager and founder, Will Stewart, with us, our managing editor, Chris Coleman, the best podcast producer behind the scenes, Malcolm Stewart, and I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes. A reminder throughout the show, if you have a question or a comment you'd like to make, a question for Will or Chris, we will get to them at the end of the show. You can drop it in the chat if you're watching live on YouTube. This week and every week, the Tech Sideline podcast is presented by the Fisher Law Firm, Virginia's trusted DUI and traffic defense firm, dedicated to defending individuals charged with traffic-related offenses. The Fisher Law Firm handles cases throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. To date, the firm has defended tens of thousands of people charged with moving violations. For free consultation, call anytime, day or evening, toll free. The number is 1-800-680-7031. Again, that's 1-800-680-7031. Or email the Fisher Law Firm at info@fisherlegal.com. So last week, we introduced new music for the Tech Sideline podcast intro
and outro. Which is still awesome.
It's still awesome. Yes. And for those that are watching today, we've got something else that's awesome this week. We have a brand new Tech Sideline logo hanging at the top of the podcast set. Will?
Right. Is that right? So Malcolm's got it on video. So I previewed this on Twitter the other night. I bought a, that's a tabletop. So I bought a 30-inch tabletop and did some LED strip lighting to backlight it. And right now, the Tech Sideline sticker that's on it is just taped on. I'm waiting for a newer, higher resolution sticker to get in. But I built it at home the other night, and it looked really awesome. And then I hung it up there, and it looks pretty awesome. But it's interesting. The backlighting kind of disappeared when we put it up against that dark wall. So I got to put another strip of LED lighting behind that. But I'm pretty pumped about it. It looks good. And I promise Chris Coleman, it will not fall on your head.
Oh, God. I'm so glad when that TV fell, I was not sitting here. That would not have been good.
Well, I can't believe we hung a TV from that wall.
I can't either, in hindsight. That's
So the disc is actually hanging from the ceiling. It is not stressing the wall at all. And we're pretty pumped about it. Always, you know, striving forward to be better here on the TSL podcast.
You know, there's been a lot that's been going on with the podcast. I mentioned the new music. Of course, we now have the new sign. And, of course, you guys just bought another office space to make more room for the Tech Sideline podcast. I bring that up because it's episode 150. Chris, when we first started doing podcasts here at TSL, did you ever think that it would grow to be what it is right now?
No, couldn't have seen that at all. I mean, I remember we first just did the audio version out of our office in Radford.
Pull the mic up. There you go.
Out of our office in Radford, and then we moved over here, slowly added a video element, which honestly, we should have just skipped that little cell phone video.
Oh man.
Put my cell phone in the little tripod.
It was so bad compared to what we do now. Not that what we do now is the best, but yes, it's certainly come a long way.
Yeah, well, so to give you some history on that, so we did, Ricky LeBlue got us started with the podcast in the old Radford office, and since it's episode 150, little podcast trivia, the walls in that place were very thin, and the guy next door used to always get phone calls during our podcast. So we could hear his phone ringing. It was very loud. I'm not sure it ever actually made it through the podcast, but In the interest of full disclosure, I can still see the three of us, me and Ricky and Chris, every time that guy's phone would ring, just flipping at the bird through the wall. Like, there you go again, phone ringing during the podcast. So then we came over to this office and we were doing audio for a while. And whose idea was it to stick the iPhone at the end of the table?
Well, I think it was mine, because what I wanted to find a way to get, initially, if you guys remember, I started doing poll questions and mm-hmm. I wanted to try and get people's feedback in during the show. So I was thinking, hey, let's do Facebook Live. And so we would just put it at the end of that table and Will would be, I think, at the end of the table, or Chris would be at the end of the table, and we would be across from each other. And
what was so stupid about that was, if we had taken the tripod and put the phone on it, like, it's kind of hard to describe, but we had it at the end of a long table. Mm-hmm. If we'd put it on one of the sides, we had a TSL logo on the wall, a couple of cool pictures. I don't know what we were thinking, but we struggled with the audio for that for a while. And then, you know, I told this story before, summer of 2019, I went down to visit texags.com down in College Station, and they're a really big operation, and they've got a really cool set. They actually do Texags radio. So they go out on the radio and over the airwaves in College Station like every morning for 2 or 3 hours. I don't know how we would talk about Tech sports every... Well, they have guests on and things like that.
I wonder
that,
if they're talking about Jimbo Fisher's $55 million buyout these days.
No, they're winning. Yeah, they're winning football games.
Are they winning this
They're number
year?
Five in the country, right?
They really? Yeah, they annihilated South Carolina.
Oh, I know they beat South Carolina this past weekend, but that's not too difficult.
Well, you know, they lost to Alabama, but that's Alabama. Yeah. But we just went down and they have a really cool set that they do Texags radio from. And then they released the video, so the kind of the light bulb went on, and we came back and built this set. Not we, Yobo.dev from Richmond, which is our programming and business consulting firm, their guys came in and built this. It was all they're doing.
Well, I remember getting that text from you just out of the blue. Hey, here's our podcast set. We're moving from the oval to this, and the oval table to this, and
I still remember that was episode 73. And there's no adornment to the set. The lighting is horrible, but it was pretty cool.
And we've kind of changed our format too. Remember, we used to do the recap and the preview of the next football game
on the same podcast,
all in one podcast. Whew. And now we're doing 2 a week. So anyways, we could spend the whole podcast talking about how far we've come. But I do want to just say, episode 150. You know, thank you to those that listen and watch, because our numbers have just been so good over the last couple of months, and we appreciate everybody's support, and it's so much fun for us to get to do this and to interact with you for questions at the end and on the boards. And so
I wish we had something fun to talk about for episode 150.
Well, so I wanted to say, I also appreciate the subscribers that we were bleeding subscribers slowly when people weren't sure there was going to be a football season. Then when they actually started playing games, things really picked up. And even with the loss to Wake and the victory over Louisville and the loss to Liberty in the last 3 weeks, subscribers are still hanging in there. And we just really appreciate that everybody appreciates what we do enough to keep subscribing even when Tech is losing. Ha ha. Sorry.
Well, let's go ahead and dive right into what is going to be a busy show today, because we're going to preview number 9 Miami hosting Virginia Tech this Saturday. And at the end, we are going to mention and talk a little bit about Virginia Tech men's basketball. I know we've had some questions the last couple of podcasts. When are you guys going to talk about basketball? Well, the schedule's been released, and the preseason poll in the ACC has been released. So we will get to that
a little bit. And there was a Zoom press opportunity this morning that we're going to cover. And really the only information there's been about basketball is that Mark Berman did an interview with Mike Young probably about a week ago, Mark Berman of the Roanoke Times. But there really haven't been press opportunities, and they didn't even really release the schedule until just a few days ago.
So I mentioned it in the open of the show that I was going to ask you two the simple question. Can Virginia Tech bounce back from a disappointing loss against Liberty, now playing the number 9 team in the country? Will, can they do it?
Yes. There is a long history of Virginia Tech bouncing back from losses where you thought they were in the tank. You know, going back to just last year, 45-10 loss to Duke, where it just looked like Fuente had completely lost the team. Then they go down to Miami, and was it 28-0 at the end of the first quarter? You know, and Miami's always been very accommodating in helping Virginia Tech bounce back from difficult times. And as we drill into breaking down Miami, you'll see that De'Aaron King is really the straw that stirs the drink there. You know, that as an overall team, they're gettable, you know, and you just never know what's going to happen in one of these games. So it could happen. Am I going to pick it? No, but it could definitely happen. It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, it was actually – if Tech beat Miami this year, I'd actually be less surprised than I was last year when they did it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I don't know why that is. I guess maybe the fact that it happened last year – makes me
well. That was Hooker's first start. Last well,
it
year,
was
right?
Hooker's. It was Hooker's first start, so we didn't know what was going to happen there. The main difference here is actually at that point in the season. I know it doesn't seem like it when you're coming off a 45-10 loss to Duke, but Tech got stronger that week, and they got stronger because they put Hooker in the game at quarterback. So they improved their quarterback situation that week. Obviously, they can't really improve their quarterback situation now. Hooker's having a really good year. But they also improved their wide receiver situation that week because they got Hazleton back healthy.
Wow.
So Tech was getting stronger at that point as a football team. And now they're having guys drop like flies, particularly on offense. So I don't think they're getting stronger now. I think they're getting
weaker.
That's
a solid point. You know, and specifically what we're talking about is Herbert possibly being
and
Mitchell, out,
Mitchell right,
being
and,
out.
But the thing is, like, so yes, Tech can it's going to be one of those things, though, that, like, I don't think they can beat Miami's A game. No chance.
Yeah, right.
Miami's going to have to turn the football over and screw up, and Virginia Tech will have to play well enough to take advantage of it.
And even some of Tech's best wins against Miami, like the 1998 game, was just a classic with NFL players all over the field. Miami turned it over five times that game, and it may have even been like five times in a row. And Tech still.
I think it was like in the
won,
second right? half, wasn't it? Like third quarter into the beginning of the fourth.
Oh
quarter
man, they
like
just
that.
They were just hemorrhaging the football there for a while. So like I said, they've been pretty accommodating at times.
We're going to talk about Miami's offense. De'Aaron King, maybe one of the best quarterbacks Virginia Tech will see all year. We'll talk about their defense and Quincy Roche. We'll talk about their special teams unit, because if there's one thing I learned last week is I will always pay attention to the special teams a little bit closer than typically on the podcast, because you never know when it comes down to a last-second field goal. I want to ask you guys this question, though. If Khalil Herbert, who barely played last week against Liberty, and James Mitchell, who did not play, such key pieces on offense, if they don't play, how much does that change things on offense?
Oh, it changes things a lot. I mean, look, if those guys don't play, then Hendon Hooker's carrying it 20-plus times.
Yeah, the same thing happened last weekend. It was the Hendon Hooker
right,
show.
Right, absolutely. Now, Tech's offense has been better the last 2 weeks. The passing game's been better. Like, as much flack as we were giving the receivers earlier in the season, when they played a poor game against Wake Forest, they've played much better since. It was almost like they got their system shocked against Wake Forest, and they've been much better, especially Trey Turner's been much, much better the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, Trey dropped a first down pass late in the game against Liberty the other day and then made three really good catches after that.
He's played so well the last 2 weeks that I think his grade this year is up to an 82.
Wow.
Which we were talking about, the receivers haven't developed. You have to wait till the end of the season to let all the grades come in before you can determine that. But yeah, he's it's almost like, well, we know he was hurt, didn't practice leading into the weight game. So maybe he's healthier now. Maybe the criticism they faced after the Wake Forest game really lit a fire under them. But at any rate, the receivers have been playing well the last 2 weeks. They're going to have to keep playing well if Virginia Tech doesn't have Khalil Herbert and James Mitchell this weekend, obviously. But it's going to be a lot of carries for Hendon Hooker if those guys can't play. And there has to be. His PFF grade is the number one in the country of all quarterbacks
for rushing. Yeah.
But so basically, that's the strength of the offense. And if you don't do it, you abandon your strength.
And we thought that last weekend would be Raheem Blackshear's coming out party. It wasn't.
It wasn't.
He touched the ball maybe 10 times. And I think I may have said this on the podcast Monday. I'm just starting to wonder if – I don't mean ever. I'm just starting to wonder if that's going to happen this year. And I know Chris has gone over how he got in late, missed some time, et cetera. It eventually you stop hoping for something to happen, and you realize this is the way it's going to be. So So I think if it doesn't happen against Miami, if you don't see let's say Herbert doesn't play, if you don't see Raheem Blackshear touching the ball 15 or 20 times, then you can just forget about it. It's not going to happen.
They did get him involved more in the passing game last week. I think he caught three or four passes, had nine carries. So I think the effort was there to a certain extent. He's not the same type of running back as Khalil Herbert. Like, he's not a guy who's going to take a deep handoff, sit patient behind the line of scrimmage for a few seconds, and then find the perfect hole, you know, use his vision to manipulate the defenders and create a hole. Yeah. That's what Herbert's so good at. Blackshear needs to be in the open field, ideally catching the football while running forward in the open field. And that's when he's at his best. But that's not really Hooker's strength as a quarterback. So the Blackshear you saw at Rutgers, I don't think it's possible to quite replicate that at Virginia Tech. Don't get me wrong, I'm glad Tech got him.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful that after a spring practice and the passing game can improve, that he can be a much bigger part of the offense next year. Because, you know, let's face it, they didn't have a chance to work with each other in the spring, or even in a lot of the preseason this year, to be quite honest. So I'm hopeful it can get better then, but it's unless they do something during the bye week. And the bye week's going to be interesting this year, because it's always like you always try to balance, okay, we want to work on us and get better, but guys are banged up at this point of the season. You want to get guys healthy. Yeah, you know, Tech's going to want to get guys healthy, but it's also you really want to get in there and really get to work on teaching your players the defensive scheme, right? But you also want them to get healthy.
I know.
So so you have to try to balance that as a coach. I don't think I would balance it this year. I think I would practice the heck out of them. That's just me.
So one more thing about Raheem Blackshear before we go on. I think, you know, and I'm not the most astute X's and O's guy, but I think the promise of Raheem Blackshear is he's so versatile and does so many things so well that you can do a lot of different things with him. Like when Khalil Herbert's in, he's going to run the football. Raheem Blackshear can run the football, catch the football. He can line up in the slot. So his promise to the promise of him to an offensive coordinator is you can run many things out of the same personnel group. And offensive coordinators love that stuff. They like that when they line up on the line of scrimmage, the defense doesn't know what's coming.
So, like, yeah, right. And you can't exactly view Blackshear based on his numbers because of that. There are times in there where he's in the game and it's a big play for either Hendon Hooker
or Khalil Herbert. So he allows other things to happen.
Right. Just the fact that he's on the field. Now, what will be interesting this week is to see if he's used on kickoff return and punt return. Obviously, there are some issues with Tavion Robinson on punt returns. Yeah. And when they had an issue earlier in the year, I think they put Blackshear back there in replace of Robinson for a game maybe. Kickoff return. Even if Herbert does play, I don't want to risk him on a kickoff return, right? I'm not exactly sure how good Miami's kicker is at kicking the ball out of the end zone anyway. But
now, hang on a second. I did the research last night. It's about two-thirds of his kickoffs.
Okay, so Tech will have an opportunity.
Their opponents have returned 11 kicks in seven games. I think they played seven
So
games.
You got to figure Miami will probably score about six touchdowns, so Tech will get three kickoff returns, something like that.
Two or three,
right?
Yeah.
So it's sad to say that Miami will probably score six touchdowns, but they probably will. So Tech will get chances to return kickoffs in this game. I would not. Krishan King was out last week. We don't know what his status is going to be this week. No. Honestly, I wouldn't be playing him anyway. I'd be forcing him to do squats because the most important thing
and eating sandwiches
because the most important thing for his future is his weight and his strength, not whether he's returning kickoffs in 2020. But yeah, I think Blackshear. I think you could see him more on special teams this week potentially.
I'll even bring Krishan up. Four pack of stick it in there if that helps him put
Those
on weight.
Those are the bad kind of carbs, though, man.
And I don't know if he's 21.
Yeah,
he's probably getting close, but you're right.
Yeah.
So
we would never endorse that.
Never.
I want to ask you guys this question. It was announced earlier in the week that Justin Fuente is heading up the scout teamwork in preparation for Miami. First time he's ever done that. What kind of message do you think that sends to the team, Will?
Well, I will, in the interest of full disclosure, this is one of those rare weeks where I did not read all of the press conference quotes and follow all of the articles. So I will have to defer that one to Chris. But on the surface, Why is the head coach running the scout team?
Well, because he didn't feel like the scout team did a good job the last 2 weeks.
Interesting.
Of giving the defense a good read. Now, it's obviously hard to simulate the speed of some of these mobile quarterbacks, but I guess he felt like there wasn't enough energy over there. And when your head coach, in the middle of the season decides to start doing something with your group that he's never done before, it means he's unhappy with you. So I'm sure that, I don't know how the game on Saturday is going to turn out, but if Virginia Tech loses, I will be willing to bet that it won't be because the scout team didn't have a good week, right?
So whoever's over there replicating De'Aaron King is probably working really hard.
Yeah, they're all working really, really hard this week. Now, it fires those guys up, of course, and helps them practice.
Well, it gives them an opportunity to be seen by the head coach.
That's the other part of it. They need to think of it. And if I was Fuente, this is what I'd tell him. He's like, look, I haven't been happy with you the last couple of weeks, and that's why I'm here. But at the same time, you guys that are not redshirting, but you guys that aren't playing this year but have an opportunity to play next year, I'm going to be sitting here watching you. You know, you have a chance to impress the head coach heading into the off season, and that's very, very important, so take advantage of it.
This is your audition.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and dive right into Miami. So 4-3, Virginia Tech travels to play the 5-1, ninth-ranked Miami Hurricanes on Saturday. Miami's lone loss was to Clemson early in the season. Chris, is this Miami team legit compared to years past? Are they a pretender or a contender?
It's kind of somewhere in between. Like, I think there's such a big difference, obviously, between the elite and everybody else that, like, okay, Miami's number 9 in the country. But, like, number 4, Clemson steamrolled them.
Yeah.
Right? So there's the gulf between the elite and everybody else.
College
football is
becoming like college women's basketball.
Oh,
the teams at the top are just really dominant.
Yeah. So, I think if their quarterback doesn't turn the football over and continues to make big plays, then they're a contender. Now they would need help to make the ACC championship game because they lost to Clemson.
Evan, do you know if they play Notre Dame?
No, they have not, and they don't. I put their remaining schedule. The thing is, like, if you look at their PFF grades and you actually just look at them as a team, like, King has made such a big difference. They got really good defensive ends, but other than that, they don't have a whole lot, honestly. It's just the ACC is not very good.
Well, one of the things Miami's been missing for years is quarterback play.
Is a quarterback.
And they've got it.
They finally got it this year.
Just a question of executing at quarterback. It's a question of the effect it has on the entire team.
Right.
You know, when your quarterback's out there chucking interceptions, it just affects the whole team.
Right.
You know, but when you've got a guy that you can count on, it fires up the defense and the rest of the offense.
And apparently, they just didn't have great leadership from that position in the past either.
Yeah.
You just never know what you're going to get from Miami. Like, when Virginia Tech upset them last year, I bet there was besides Virginia Tech fans, there was nobody more shocked than Miami fans, right? Yeah. And the Miami players. So what did they do after that game? They won 4 of their next 5, and they beat a good Virginia team, a good Louisville team, and there was another pretty good team
Pitt,
in there.
Pitt was in there.
Pitt was in there, yeah. So they started playing better after they lost to Virginia Tech, won 4 of their next 5, and then their last 3 games, they lost to Florida International, Duke, who was bad last year, and then in the bowl game, they lost to Louisiana Tech 14-0.
So they just didn't show up for 3 games.
And so, like, you win 4 out of 5, and you beat some good teams, and then all of a sudden, and if you remember the Florida International game, it was like some of the players went out the night before the game. They went out clubbing in Miami.
Some key players.
And then the next day, it was probably a noon game. They're rolling there, and it's like varsity blues, right? When Jonathan Moxon takes the team out the night before a game and did not go so well that next game, right? So that's what Miami players.
I got to go back and watch that movie again.
Oh yeah, it's great.
Another movie I have not seen.
Oh what? That's ridiculous.
I do want to shout out an Evan in the chat who asks, why does Evan keep saying the game's at Miami? I apologize. I know
did
the game
really?
Is at Lane Stadium. I did. Yeah. I appreciate a fellow Evan looking out for another Evan.
I would feel better if the game was at Miami. Okay.
Yes, because they'll go out the night before.
If the game was at Miami, there's always a chance those Miami players go out the night before. Maybe they went out the night before the game last year. I don't know.
That's right. Because
they certainly played like they did.
Yeah.
But if the game's in Blacksburg,
there's nothing to do.
They're going to be in their hotel room the night before, man. They're going to get a good night's sleep, and they're going to be ready to play. I'd rather play them in Miami this year, to be honest.
I want to spend some time talking about Houston transfer quarterback De'Aaron King. He's completing nearly 64% of his passes. He has over 1,800 yards of the air, 16 touchdowns to 4 picks, and he is 2 yards shy of leading the team in rushing. He has 406 yards on the ground. Chris,
yeah.
Over the last 3 weeks, we've seen Cunningham of Louisville. Hokies have seen Willis of Liberty. Now they're going to see King of Miami. Who's the most dangerous quarterback of those three?
I certainly think King is the most consistent.
He's consistent, yes.
He doesn't turn the ball over. He's a good athlete.
So let me jump in here. Let's clarify that. You just said he had 4 interceptions. But his turnover-worthy play rate is only 1.9%. Only one out of every 50 plays is he going to fumble or throw an interception.
Right. So he doesn't screw up like Cunningham.
Yeah.
He's
a pretty high turnover.
Right. He's a better passer than Willis.
And how many times did Willis fumble?
He fumbles a lot.
Yeah.
Twice last week, I think.
Yeah,
right?
At least twice.
Yeah. So he doesn't screw up like Cunningham, and he is a better natural passer than Willis, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's the best quarterback that Tech has faced in the last 3 weeks, and it's going to be a monumental challenge for sure to stop him. And you can't say he hasn't had a fun college experience, man. You know, he started off as a wide receiver at Houston, was a wide receiver for a couple of years, caught 58 passes,
that's amazing,
or something like that.
Yeah.
scored receiving touchdowns, then the next year moved to quarterback, and he also returned kicks in there. So throughout the course of his college career, he's caught touchdown passes, he's rushed for touchdowns, he's thrown touchdown passes, and he even ran a kickoff back for a touchdown when he was at Houston. That's like a high school career. That's like what the best player on your high school team does.
Yeah, they
right?
give him the ball.
Yeah, that's quite a career.
That was Chris Coleman back in the day when he was playing high school football.
Not so much.
So not that King, not that Virginia Tech is a big-time blitzing team, but this is an interesting stat. King has been lethal against the blitz with the highest passing grade in the conference and 10 big-time throws against the blitz.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil Dracovic of Boston College is second with 6. So this is a guy, he just doesn't, you know, one of the things I always find interesting when we're previewing these games is, what does a guy do when the pocket breaks down? And Dracovic is very good. His grade basically doesn't change when the pocket breaks down. And King is also very dangerous. Whereas I think it was Cunningham got a lot worse when the pocket broke
down. He's terrible. Yeah. As we saw, and Tech took advantage of that by blitzing a lot and forced a couple turnovers on those blitzes when they got close to him.
Yeah.
This is tough for Tech's defense. But when you think about his strengths and weaknesses, it's like, okay, you don't want to blitz him because he'll pick you apart, right? So,
or worse, scramble. Well, neither one's worse.
He's awesome at both. So you want to rush 4. Like, from that standpoint, you think, okay, it's probably a good idea to rush 4 and keep your linebackers in zone so they're able to come up and tackle him. But here's the thing. Tech can't play zone. Tech is terrible in zone defense this year. If you play man and you put your linebackers in man coverage, they're going to have their backs turned to him, right? Which is going to give him a lot of room to scramble. So there's just not a great answer here for Virginia Tech. And I don't think, outside of Tisdale, I don't think Tech's linebackers are athletic enough to keep up with him in the open field anyway.
So,
we don't even know how healthy Ashby is. Even if he was 100% healthy, he's not. Rayshard Ashby this year.
Right. So this is getting away from the De'Aaron King discussion, but their center has a bad pass blocking grade. So maybe you can do some stunts or something like that. But if you do a stunt, you're removing a defensive end from the side and sending him up the middle and possibly losing contain.
Right. So exactly. You've got a stunt is basically when two defensive tackles switch spots post-snap, basically.
Yeah.
You got to have quick players to do that. And Tech does have quick defensive linemen, so that they can do that with effectiveness. But, you know, if you get caught up in a double team or something like that when you're stunting, and, you know, stunting can be boom or bust for a defense, especially against a mobile quarterback sometimes, because if he hits it right, he can gash you. So it's just, this is a major, major challenge for the Virginia Tech defense, in my opinion.
And again, I want to reiterate this. I don't know if we said this, but Derek King is the highest graded quarterback in the ACC, edging out Trevor Lawrence. Hendon Hooker, and Sam Howell. So, I mean, you know, he doesn't turn the football over, which I think is so, because Malik Willis was so good on paper, but like we noticed last week, he fumbled the football a lot, and he did fumble the ball against Virginia Tech.
I just have this image of Derek King in my mind outside the pocket, zing, just throwing a dart and hitting somebody, you know, and that's probably what elevates him above those other guys.
And you know, his first game against UAB, it wasn't all that impressive, but ever since then,
he's been good.
He's been really, really good. And that's not too surprising because, you know, I mean, he didn't get to go through spring practice and a new offense and everything like that. That's hurt. So, I mean, considering the fact that he comes from a different background, and I don't know, maybe Miami got some of their spring in. They are in Miami.
They may have, yeah.
So that probably helped them to a certain extent.
Pretty sure Clemson, of course,
got a week or two in. Yeah.
You know, in Chris's game preview, which is on TechSideline.com, I encourage everybody to go read it. The reason we're spending so much time talking about Derek King, the headline for the offense in the article, the one-man show, ... And it explains why Derek King is really the engine that makes Miami go on offense. I want to bring up the game last week. So the Hurricanes scored 10 points in the fourth quarter, beat NC State 44-41 on a Friday night game. It looked like the Wolfpack were going to upset Miami.
Yeah, it did.
With Bailey Hockman.
Here were the numbers for King against North Carolina State. 31-41 through the air, 430 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks. On the ground, 15 carries for 105 yards. And I want to point out that last week against North Carolina State, Miami ran King on design runs 14 times. His previous high for number of design runs in a game was 7 in the second game against Louisville.
So they saw something.
I always played NCAA football on, like, depending on my slider settings, I'd either have them on All-American difficulty or Heisman difficulty for more of a challenge, right?
Of course.
But every now and then you like to just play an exhibition game, set it down to JV level just to watch some cool highlights, and that's kind of like King against NC State, apparently. I mean, those stats, that's ridiculous.
So what you guys talked about a little bit defensively, but what can Virginia Tech defensively do to try and contain him?
I have no idea, Evan. I don't have an answer. Play better than you have the last 2 weeks. I mean, I don't think there's any more you can do from an X's and O's standpoint.
Just try to make plays.
I think Tech got outnumbered in the running game against Liberty up front in the traditional running game. And maybe that's a Justin Hamilton issue, maybe it's not. But as far as what Hamilton's done to try to contain mobile quarterbacks, I think schematically he's done everything fine. They just haven't been able to do it because they don't have enough good players. And that's not going to magically change on November 12th in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't think there's not some magic button you can push and say, oh, this is what they have to do to stop him. Because like I said, you know, you can blitz him and he'll burn you. You can sit back in zone, but Tech can't play zone. Tech's linebackers aren't athletic enough to deal with him anyway, except for Tisdale, and he's small. So I just don't think it's a horrible matchup, and Tech needs to score a lot of points.
Let's transition to look at the rest of this Miami offense. And I mentioned that on the season, King has 406 rushing yards. Their top running back, Cameron Harris, has 408 rushing yards. Will, you look at the start of to the season that Harris had. He went over the century mark in his first two games. Since, Harris has not broken over 50 yards rushing in a game. So does it feel like this rushing attack starts with King and that's the focal point?
It looks that way so far. I mean, if you look, they both average 5 yards a carry.
Look at their stats. They're almost identical.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Harris has 81 rushes, 408, 5 yards a carry, 5 touchdowns. King has 82 rushes, 406, 5 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns. I don't know that you can draw judgments on Miami's traditional running game and what it's going to look like against Virginia Tech, because you've seen a number of teams just line up and go right at the middle of the Tech defense. Liberty did it. Duke did it. NC State did it. Wake did it. you know.
I don't know. I don't know if Miami's more of an inside or an outside team. Louisville, their bread and butter is that outside that stretch play. Yeah. But that's the one thing Tech does have. They've got some quickness on the defensive line because they're so small. So they shut the Louisville running game down because of that.
So one of the things we miss on these Thursday podcasts is Brandon Patterson has not done his scouting report yet for us. So we are left with, and this became an issue last week. I'll tell you a little story. We sat here and we badmouthed the Liberty kicker. He was getting touchbacks on 25% of his kicks. His longest field goal made was 42, and he was 2 of 6 over 30 yards. We're like, oh, that guy's a bad kicker. Turns out not. Turns out he was a transfer. He's a transfer from Penn State, and he was having some injury issues that he apparently got over because 4 of his 6 kicks went for touchbacks. And he crushed a 51-yarder to win it. So we do the best we can previewing this stuff. So when you ask a question like this, Chris makes a good point. What is Miami's running back rushing game? If it is more of an outside zone stretch kind of thing, then Tech has shown against Louisville that they can defend that kind of thing using Alan Tisdale. But we don't know at this point. We won't know it until we read Brandon's in-depth preview.
Yeah, that's right. And I will say this. Cameron Harris is their running back. He should be playing for Louisville because of the big play nature.
Right, yeah. Listen to this.
And I'll say this. You know, you might spend most of the game thinking nothing about their running back and even thinking, oh, Virginia Tech's doing a great job against the run. And then they're going to bust an 80-yarder because that's just what they do.
So read the stat.
He has seven of his carries have gone for 248 yards this year. The other 73 carries have netted just 169 yards, which is just 2.3 yards per carry.
2.3 yards a carry.
59.5% of his yardages have come on those seven carries.
Right. Mm.
So this is a guy who, like the Louisville offense, basically, spends the whole game doing, or most of the game doing, a whole lot of nothing. And then
boom,
breaks a big play, right? So,
so you might get that out of
you. You could see some of that. You can't fall asleep against him because he is capable, but
but not consistent,
right? You can, or maybe he's the problem. Maybe the offensive line's problem. I don't know. But you know, you can stop him 8 plays in a row, and then the 9th play, he's going to hit a big play. It's kind of the nature of their offense.
I want to transition and look at the Miami receiving core and the weapons that King has to look at. Part of the reason I think the numbers are not as good as they could be, Brevin Jordan, who's arguably their best target, has been out, and there's a chance that the Miami tight end Jordan might return this weekend against the Hokies. He's someone who could be a very high NFL draft pick in the upcoming draft. But one thing I wanted to point out, Chris, you mentioned this in your article, that Derek King's PFF grade is 91.6, which means he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country, rightfully so. But as you point out, only one other Miami player has played more than 33 snaps. Wide receiver Mike Harley has a grade above 70 on offense. So when you look at the receiving core, Harley, what do you see? Is Jordan that guy that you worry about if he's back healthy?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very good player. Compared to the Tech offense, where I think 9 of Tech's 11 starters grade out above a 70. In Miami, it's just one other guy besides De'Aaron King. So, if you think Miami's offense is better than Virginia Tech's, it's not.
It's really not.
It's really not. Tech's individual players have been very, very good this year on offense for the most part. You'd like to have more receiver depth, of course, and I don't think the receivers kicked it up a gear until after the Wake Forest game, but overall Tech has a lot of good pieces on offense. This week, though, it's just a matter of are all those pieces actually going to be in there playing in the game.
Brevin Jordan, his numbers on the 18 catches, 243 yards and 3 touchdowns, but he's been, again, out the last couple of weeks. Last thing we'll touch on before we head to a break, we'll talk about the defense just a moment. You mentioned the offensive line a little bit earlier, Will. What do you see in the trenches, Tech's defensive line against Miami's offensive line? What do you expect?
It's encouraging that the center, Corey Gaynors, is, at least if you go by grades, the weakest part of their offensive line. Mm. I think that bodes well for Gerard Hewitt and Narrell Pollard. They're apparently not all that great at getting a push in the running game. They're average in rush yards before contact. So I think that's a, I'm not saying that's a mismatch in Virginia Tech's favor, but I think it's a good matchup in Virginia Tech's favor.
But
De'Aaron King negates all that.
Yeah. I mean, I just, hopefully he has a bad game. So, and when you sit here and you're like, man, our best chance to win is to hope the other team's best player, who pretty much never makes mistakes, has a bad game.
You look at Hendon Hooker. Hendon Hooker doesn't play like he played against Wake.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. Dude, Hendon Hooker is one of the highest grading quarterbacks in the country. He has been fantastic.
With that game added.
Right. So even if you think about like the limitations of the traditional passing game this year, you know, it's honestly as it usually is. Like, Cornelson is really, really good at formulating an offense around his quarterback's strengths.
Yeah.
Right? That's what he's really good at. That's his strength as a coach, and we're seeing it this year. Like Hooker's overall grade is above a 90, and he's just doing a great job.
And that's because he's been put in positions to succeed.
Right.
And because he's a good runner. But nobody around the nation's talking about Hendon Hooker, and they're not going to.
Right.
You know, but he is very effective in this offense.
I've asked this question before. This will be our final one talking about the Miami offense. Look at Virginia Tech's schedule and who they played this so far this year. Is this the most explosive offense Virginia Tech will go up against so far this season?
North Carolina.
Well,
in North Carolina and Louisville are and more
Louisville
explosive.
Are more explosive.
Yeah.
But perhaps the guy who just gets the most out of his offense has got to be De'Aaron King.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tech has certainly seen a lot of good offenses. Of course, they still have Clemson later in the year. There's been a lot of good offense in the ACC this year. All right, that's a look at the Miami offense. We're going to step aside for a break here on What's a Milestone Podcast, episode 150 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. But when we come back, we take a look at the Miami defense. We talk a little bit of Hokie hoops, and then we get to your questions on YouTube Live. You're watching and listening to episode 150 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm.
If you have received a DUI or other traffic-related offense, the road ahead can seem uncertain. Here at Fisher Law Firm, we have a team that is with you every step of the way. We have the experience that comes along with having defended more than 30,000 criminal and traffic cases statewide and the expertise to get the job done. Call anytime, day or evening, for your free consultation or a complimentary copy of my book. Don't forget to ask us about our free appeal guarantee. To learn how we can help solve your problem, check us out at fisherlegal.com. This is Jonathan Fisher, class of 98. Let's go Hokies.
Welcome back in to episode 150 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We've got Chris Coleman and Will Stewart on the set. Best podcast producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes, and I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes. It's great to have you with us. We're recording right now, Thursday afternoon, November 12th, previewing Virginia Tech in Miami. Still to come on the podcast, we'll talk a little bit of Hokie hoops, and we'll get to your questions. If you have one for Will and Chris, drop them in the YouTube chat, and I will read it to them at the end of the show. Reminder that the Tech Sideline Podcast is also presented by Southeast Regional Training Center. If you want to help Virginia Tech Wrestling, go to southeastrtc.com. Two really big signees yesterday for Tony Roby at Virginia Tech and his staff, bringing in Cooper Flynn, as well as Trey Kibe. Kibe is from Reidsville, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a state they really try hard to recruit. Mm-hmm. And Cooper Flynn is from Maryland. Flynn is number 3 in the country in his weight class, and Kibe is number 4 in the country in his weight class. So again,
and they're both top 25 guys?
Correct.
Overall?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so just another job well done from Tony.
Five-star recruits in terms of.
Man, that roster keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper.
Can't wait.
Which leads to increased competition in practice, which just makes you better and better.
Oh, yeah. Man. Wait till some guys hit the portal. Tony Roby's lost control of that program.
And for those that are watching right now and you're wondering, why in the world is Will Stewart wearing a beanie on set? Well, Campus Emporium, proud partners and sponsors here of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Will, you're wearing a beanie right now. Tell us why.
Yes, I look ridiculous. It's the featured item of the week from Campus Emporium, and we've got it linked on the website, and we'll drop the link in the description for this video on YouTube. It's warm with the mask on. It's warm.
I was about to ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how warm are your ears right now?
So I said on Twitter, these things make my head itch. You know, I can't wear these things. So the question is, can I survive to the end of the podcast wearing the beanie? Mm-hmm.
I think Malcolm.
You're already looking a little sweaty, like right there.
Oh, I know it. I know it. So
I think Malcolm could rock that podcast right now. Put the big headset he has on over the beanie. So
what's the over under on the number of minutes Will can last
wearing the beanie?
Yeah, it's about to turn.
Let's go over under 20.
20. God, that's a lot. I don't think you can last that long. I was going to say like 9.5.
Okay. All right. Let's go with 9.5. It's 150,
150
right
now.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll look at 150.
So here's the description. This knit beanie from 47 Brand will keep your head warm. Yes, it will. I'll vouch for that. Yeah, these lights we have here, they're not warm. They're LED lights, so the heat's not coming from the lights. Embroidered VT logo on the cuff. One size fits on the yeah, I'm pointing at the right place. One size fits most, 100% acrylic. So
we just talked a lot about Miami's offense and De'Aaron King. What does the Hurricanes' defense look like? We dive into that right now on episode 150 of the Tech Sideline podcast as Virginia Tech plays host to number 9 Miami this weekend inside of Lane Stadium. Chris, you talked about it a little bit earlier in the podcast. You detailed this in your game preview, which is up on TechSideline.com right now. Their defensive ends and their D-line looks to be the strength of their defense.
Those defensive ends, Jalen Phillips and Quincy Roche.
Roche.
Yeah. They're really, really good. And it's really a good matchup because they're Miami's two best offensive players defensive players. Meanwhile, at Virginia Tech, Christian Darrisaw is Tech's, from a grading standpoint, best offensive player. And Luke Tenuta's up there, too. I mean, Tenuta and Darrisaw might actually be the best offensive tackle combo
in the country.
In the country. So, which is hard to believe. I mean, you say when you look at a 4-3 team that just lost to Liberty, you run – sometimes you kind of think, oh, man, that team's not any good. They don't have any good players, right? And Tech has a lot of good players. Unfortunately, they're all concentrated on one side of the ball. And Tech has a lot of good players on offense. I think that's a good matchup. That's a matchup to watch. Those offensive tackles against Miami's defensive ends. And if Virginia Tech's offensive tackles win that battle, then Virginia Tech's going to move the football.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Real quick, Pro Football Focus grades of the tackles that Will was just referring to. Christian Darrisaw, 95.8.
I did an Inside the Numbers last week against Darrisaw, and since PFF began doing grades in 2014, he is the highest grading Virginia Tech football player.
Right tackle for Virginia Tech, Luke Tenuta, is an 87.4 grade. I bring that up because the Pro Football Focus grades for Jalen Phillips, 82, and Quincy Roche is a 78.7. So if you're looking for a matchup going into this weekend, Will, it feels like that's the one you should look out for in the trenches.
And Roche, you probably remember his name because he visited Tech as a grad transfer from Temple. He left Blacksburg all but committed to Virginia Tech.
He went to a basketball game or something like that.
Yeah, really liked it, liked the coaching staff. From what I understand, there was an issue. Like, they didn't know if they could get him in academically, or there was some academic stuff that needed to be processed, and it didn't get done, or they weren't sure they could get him in academically, and then Miami came in with an offer and guaranteed him admission, and he went there.
He said some very encouraging things, and the Tech coaching staff thought they were going to get him, and then there was a hiccup, and that was the end of that.
That was it.
And things move quickly, you know, and apparently that's what happened there. And I'd like to have the guy, but we were talking before we went on the air with the podcast that's not really – defensive ends isn't really what
Tech's defensive
needs.
Ends are playing pretty well this year. Amari Barno's playing well. Yeah. Reed has been well. Don't get me wrong, I'd like to have him. But if you told me right now, like, oh, you can pick a defensive end or a defensive tackle to add to your team, I'm taking that
or a linebacker
for sure.
I'm not sure it would change the one loss record to have him here.
I don't think it would, yeah.
You mentioned the word linebacker. Let's talk about Miami's linebackers real quick because you go from a big strength of their team on the D-line, just talking about Phillips and Roche, as the headline the subhead of Chris's game preview here. Big weakness at linebacker. Zach McLeod, Bradley Jennings Jr., Sam Brooks Jr. all have less than a 50 Pro Football Focus grade. McLeod, 49.7. Jennings Jr., 45.1. Brooks Jr., 42.2.
And I think I included – all right, so Virginia Tech's linebackers, Tisdale has been pretty good this year, but other than that, they have not played well. So what are Virginia Tech's linebackers' grades? Compare it.
Allen Tisdale's a 64.3. Rayshard Ashby a 51.3, and Dax Hollyfield is a 45.2. Right. So by the Pro Football Focus grades, Hollyfield would be the second best linebacker on Miami's
and
team.
And Hollyfield hasn't been good at all, decidedly bad for the most part, and yet he would be Miami's second best linebacker. So that shows you how bad Miami's linebackers are. I don't know the reasoning for that, because a guy like Zach McLeod is a senior, and he's been playing there for a long, long time. I mean, it seems like – I think it was 2016 – when Miami rolled into Blacksburg and started three true freshman linebackers, and he was one of them, and he ended up redshirting at some point along the line.
Yeah, and the other two were really good players.
Yeah. And McLeod's a good player, or he has been a pretty good player. And so I don't know what's wrong, what's happened to him this year. I mean,
yeah, I haven't watched enough Miami football to tell you.
I just know
that when they played Louisville, I had that on. And by on, I always mean I'm looking at my phone, looking at the game, looking at my phone, looking at the game. And Miami controlled that game, but Louisville, you know, they went up and down the field and scored plenty of points.
So, like, Miami's linebackers are a weakness, and I think Khalil Herbert would be in line for a big game, and James Mitchell, if they're going to play and if they're 100%. We just don't know. Yeah, so I have no explanation for Zach McLeod being bad this year. Like, some guys, I think, just didn't take the offseason seriously because they didn't think there was going to be a season.
And we don't know what guys are facing at home, you know.
Right.
So here's something that worries me about the Miami defense. They have the league's lowest missed tackle rate at 14%. Mm. They are the best tackling team in the league.
They bend but don't break.
And Wake Forest was a good tackling team. Liberty tackled very well. And I think that's where the absence of Khalil Herbert really hurts you. Because he can avoid tackles and break tackles. So if you talk about everybody else on Tech's team, and you know you've seen it, I thought that's one of the problems Tech had against Liberty was just when Liberty hit them, they tackled them.
One thing I do want to bring up, and you might have mentioned this while I was looking at the comments, but worth bringing up again, that Jalen Phillips, back to one of their defensive ends, ranks third in the ACC in win rate, which means percentage of the time you beat your blocker, at 19.8%.
One out of every five times.
That's a lot.
We'll see if he can do that against Darrisaw and Tanuda, right? Yeah, I think you said in your article, I mean, this is going to be an NFL defensive ends potentially going up against NFL tackles.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
cool.
If they let people in the stands or in stadiums this year, there would be NFL scouts at the game on Saturday.
Now, I did see – no, there were NFL scouts in the press box for the first time in the Liberty game.
There were really
three guys in front of me, yeah. And of course, you ask them, who are you looking at? And they're like, oh, we're looking at everybody. No, you're not.
No, it's like when you see scouts at a minor league summer collegiate league.
I sat next to an NBA scout at a Tech game a couple years ago, and I knew exactly who he was looking at.
Right. I did catch Jalen Phillips. He's number 15. I caught him dogging it during that game against NC State. I texted Chris about it. You know, I watched him. I don't know. I don't remember the specific circumstances of the game, but I think he was a little gassed and he was just kind of standing up and holding his blocker, you know. So go at him, Tech man. Get him to do that.
All right. So let's transition to special teams real quick, because it is worth mentioning. We went from talking about Alex Barbier last week and 2 of 6 beyond 30 yards. Well, Jose Borregales is one of the best kickers in the country.
He's the best kicker in the history of football. Let's go all the way in.
He will never miss a kick, ever. His range is good to 60 yards. He is automatic under 50. We don't know if any of this is true.
So he's a transfer from Florida International. He's 13 of 14 on the year with a long of 57 yards. That's an NFL kick right there. He's number 2 in FBS in career field goals made with 63. 63. Trailing only Jake Verity of East Carolina with 72. So
how about that? ECU's got the kicker with the most career field goals.
How about that? So basically, if you're a Miami offense, all you have to do is pick up 3 first downs, and then even if you get stopped, you're going to score. Yeah.
Yeah, yes. To make from 57, really, if you're just about the 40-yard line, you're in field goal range.
I bet that would have been good from 59.
So,
too soon?
Certainly from 51.
I actually think and I believe Borregales, by the way, is a lefty kicker. Don't see that every day.
Huh. Boy, that would be hard to hold for.
Gosh.
So yeah, you really think about it. You really don't see many lefty kickers. College, NFL.
Yeah, I don't sit around looking for lefty kickers either. So when you see one, you think, oh, what's that? Looks weird. Oh, he's a lefty.
Yeah, I believe he is. But anyway, so that's a look at the special teams. That's our preview. Number 9, Miami.
Well, no, wait a minute. You got to talk about the punter too.
You want to talk about the punter? Okay, I was trying to conserve time to make sure we had enough. Headley is his name.
Yes.
He averages 46.3 yards per punt. Canes ranked number 13 in the nation in net punting. Virginia Tech is number 5 at 40.3 net yards per punt. So Headley, Bradburn, pretty similar in stats there.
I just don't know that they're going to have to punt a lot.
The only other thing I can think that I researched was that Miami gives up close to 26 yards per kickoff return, but they've only had 11 returned against them, and one of those was for a touchdown, so that kind of skews the average. Other than that, they're kind of right about where Tech is, around 17 or 18 yards a return.
So I ask you guys now, it's the point of the podcast, we're right in our time for predictions. Chris, you brought up something in your article called the law of averages. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast. You think it could be time for Miami to lose. They might be due for a loss. However, this offense is clicking, solid defensive ends. Can Virginia Tech beat Miami? Are you picking the Hokies?
They can beat them. And I brought up the law of averages before the UVA game last year. I said I think Tech is better than UVA, but the law of averages, UVA is going to have to win this game at some point. And I was particularly concerned because UVA was much better than Tech in 2018, but Tech still won the game, right? So that means like UVA is really due to win after that, and then they won. As far as the law of averages go, it's like Miami's 6-1. I honestly don't think they're good enough across the board to be a 7-1 football team. Like you're gonna, if they beat the Hokies, they'll be 7-1. You know, ranked 7th in the country or whatever they'll be after this week. And I don't think that's who they are. I think they're due to drop another game. They're not going to lose to Georgia Tech, but you know they still play UNC and.
Their schedule is Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, UNC.
They could lose to Wake Forest or UNC and get that loss that they're due, I think. But I just – or it could be to Virginia Tech. But I just – I hope it's Virginia Tech. But I just don't see it. Like, I didn't see last year's result either, but like, if I thought Virginia – if I knew with 100% certainty that James Mitchell was going to be 100% healthy and that –
Khalil Herbert.
And that Khalil Herbert was going to be 100% and that Rayshard Ashby was going to play and that Jermaine Waller was going to play because, you know, Waller hasn't played – what has he played, 2 games this year?
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys are all in doubt.
Yeah, and so it's like a lot of your best players may not play and – That's no way to go into a game with Miami, which Miami might be getting stronger. Like they might be getting one of their best offensive players back,
Brevin Jordan.
Didn't they have some COVID issues on defense?
That I don't know.
I think Fuente talked about that or something research. Today. But like I think Miami's more likely to get stronger this game if they get Jordan back. And I don't know that Virginia Tech is going to be as strong this week as they were like 2 weeks ago. And so I can't see it. I think Tech will score, but I've got it 37-27 Miami.
Yeah, I went with 38-28. I think that's probably too conservative. I see Miami putting up over 40. If Liberty with ball control offense put up 38, I think Miami put up over 40.
I think Tech's going to try to do the same thing that Liberty did to Virginia Tech last week. I think Tech's going to try to do the same thing to Miami. They're going to run the clock down and burn as much clock as possible. And that's what I think why I really picked Miami to score 37 is because I don't think there's going to be as many plays in this game. I could be wrong.
One of my favorite things in prepping for this podcast, and Will always brings it up, at the bottom of the game preview, we want to get your prediction.
The prediction poll.
And so last week there were 1,099 votes.
So 1,100 votes.
Who is going to win between Virginia Tech and Liberty? Ugh. A combined 50 people of the 1,100 picked Liberty.
So the 50 Liberty
60
fans.
People, actually, 38 plus 22.
I can't do math. That is really bad math. Yes, 60
I was
people.
An engineering major.
Thank you.
So that's, 60 out of 1,100.
60 out of 1,100 picked Liberty in any capacity, whether that was 11 plus or whether that was 1 to 10. This week, 45%. 124 votes say Miami wins by 11 plus. There's a total of 278 votes in the poll right now. The viewers on TechSideline.com, the subscribers say that Miami, let's see, 124 plus 66. So that's nearly, Will, you're looking at close to 200 of the
270. That's 190, yeah. So basically 68% of voters think Miami's going to win this one so far.
I'm actually... I think if they were all neutral voters and they weren't Miami fans, they weren't Tech fans, I think that number would be higher. Is Virginia Tech still favored?
It's Virginia Tech, as of last night, was favored by 2.5. The ESPN FPI or whatever it is predictor gives Tech something like a 60% chance of winning.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. Like,
I'm baffled by all
like,
that.
The numbers are like Tech scores a lot of points. So there's that, but I don't think people realize that Herbert might not play. Yeah. That's just a strange one to me.
All right, well, it's 2:05. We're an hour and 5 minutes in. I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about basketball, and then we'll get to some questions on YouTube Live, and then we'll wrap up this milestone podcast here. So, Hokie Hoops, gentlemen, starts in 2 weeks. It's going to be here, 2.5 weeks. It's going to be here just before you know it.
Two weeks. Today's the 12th, right?
It starts the 25th.
13 days away.
The schedule just came out. Virginia Tech's going to open their season against the Radford Highlanders. A little New River Valley action to open the season. Chris, the schedule came out, and Virginia Tech was predicted to finish 11th out of 15 teams in the ACC. I know how busy you are with football, and I know the next 13 days we're going to be getting ready here at Tech Sideline for basketball, but just looking at that 11 out of 15, is that about right?
Not knowing hardly anything about the rest of the ACC, probably. The schedule is going to be more difficult this year than it was last year. Tech is going to have more size, and they're going to have more experience, so that on the one hand, that's better, but also at the same time, the schedule is going to be more difficult. So I think it kind of balances itself out. I think Tech will have some good moments this year, but I also think I think once you see the product, you'll also recognize that the program under Mike Young is still developing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yep. So let's see. From last year's team, Landers Nolly transferred to Memphis. I think that's addition by subtraction. They also, P.J. Horn transferred out and wound up at Georgia. P.J.'s just, as we've covered over and over and over, P.J. just didn't really have a future in the program.
The poor guy's a 6'5
post player. And,
right.
And then Isaiah Wilkins was the other one who transferred out. And like Horn, Wilkins didn't really have a future in the program, but Tech will see him because he's playing for Wake Forest.
And he got cleared to play right away.
I think all three of them got cleared to play. Well, PJ's a grad
transfer.
Yeah.
Well, of course he did. And Wilkins absolutely should have. And I'm sure, because Mike Young was honest with him and said, look, you can come back if you want to, but you're not. You're not a fit for my system.
Right.
So he was honest with him. So, and when a situation like that happens, then that player should be cleared to play right away. And I've heard Wilkins may start for Wake Forest.
I've heard
that would
well.
Be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope he does. Cool. He's a good dude. He's a real good dude.
Yeah. And so from high school recruiting ranks, they added Darius Maddox and Joe Bamisil. And Bamisil is
earning. David and Gison.
Yeah. And David, I think the N is silent.
I think you're right.
David Gison. He's a 6'8", 6'9", forward. Kind of skinny, about 210. But fairly athletic, and Bamisil is supposedly the guy who is really got a really bright future, very athletic. So they lose those three guys to transfer. They add three freshmen, and then just a pile of transfers.
Cordell Pemsel.
And as I believe all of these guys are eligible. First of all, Kevi Aluma, who played for Mike Young at Wofford, transferred last year and sat out. He becomes eligible, post player. And that's a guy that will know Young's system. Mm-hmm. And be able to.
He was a starter for him at Wofford. Started for him at the four at Wofford. Young said last week if the season started tomorrow, he'd start for us and he would start at center.
Really?
He can play the four or the five.
Interesting.
At Tech. And Mutz.
Justin Mutz.
It's funny. I wrote in articles multiple times. It's like, we need a real junkyard dog with that undersized power forward, and then we get Mutz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And you got Cartier Diarra, who's a point guard from Kansas State, very athletic. But when Diarra signed with Virginia Tech, we did some research on him. And he's very athletic and can go to the hole, which Tech really needs, but he turns it over a lot, which is a bad fit for a Mike Young offense. So it's going to be interesting to see, can Coach Young and his system coach that out of Diarra?
Well, the interesting thing is, like, I look at his three-point percentage, and it was very good as a freshman.
Gradually declining, yeah.
Okay as a sophomore, and then bad as a junior. He took more shots as a junior. I don't think he played on a very – well, I know he –
I think he's trying to do too
much. I know he didn't play on a very good team as a junior. Yeah. And I think he's in a better situation now. So I'd be very surprised if his turnover – I don't think his turnover rate will be a problem. The bigger question is, how good of a shooter is he?
Yeah.
If his freshman and sophomore year numbers are more reflective of how good of a shooter he is, then you could play him with Wabi Sabidi. But if his junior – if who he is really as a shooter – is his junior year numbers, then I don't see how you can play him and Beedy together very much at the same time. But he is a very good defender, so if Tech is holding a late lead, then I think you see those two guys on the court together.
That's right, yeah. That's right. And so Justin Mutz out of Delaware, got a lot of playing experience, post player. Cordell Pemsel out of Iowa.
He's a pretty good player. He's had some injuries. But he was backing up the best player, arguably the best player in the country in Iowa.
So they will join returning starters Tyrese Radford, Nahima Lean, and Wabi Sabidi, and key reserves and guys who started at times, Jalen Cohn, Hunter Couture, and John Ogiako. And Ogiako is a guy that if you want to put a Luma at the four, Ogiako has to be a guy who can be effective at the five. I think it's a big year for him. This is his third year in the program, Chris. Is that right?
Ogiako, second. He was a freshman last
good
year.
Good. Okay, excellent.
I love that dude.
Sophomore. Right?
He's going to get everything. He's going to get – he's from Nigeria. And I thought this was interesting. During games when they ask Tech players questions, they put them up on the video board for the interviews and things like that. And they asked all the Tech players last year, like, cookies or ice cream? That's a typical thing you would ask an American kid, right? And they all had their own answer, because American kids grow up eating cookies and ice cream. And Ogiako's answer was neither. I like healthy food. So, like, I think that guy is going to get the absolute most out of his ability at Virginia Tech. And I think he has a lot of ability.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to take cookies on that, but good answer with the healthy.
I'm an ice cream guy, man.
Ice cream. Honestly, you can mix them both together, and then
there you go.
I can just eat chocolate chip ice cream just over and over and over. It's crazy. If I want to mix it up, I'll throw some peanuts in it.
So as we record on Thursday, season starts in 13 days. So we'll have coverage on TechSideline.com.
It's gonna be that week is when our basketball coverage will start, the bye week, because we run so much content these days that I wouldn't have time to do a decent job of anything if I tried to combine it with football coverage during a week. I mean, there's
now
just,
that said, we've got Jake Lyman.
Jake watched the press conference this morning, was there on it, and we are going to have an article on that. But like, I personally am not going to write anything.
I think you ought to sign Jake to write a preview, kind of a roster breakdown.
Yeah, well, probably.
So let's just have the editorial meeting right here on the podcast.
There we go. At Jake Lyman, for those that missed the press conference this morning, he was doing live tweet updates, and you can go to at Jake Lyman to see some of the highlights on his Twitter.
Oh, actually, it's Lyman Jake.
I haven't read his article yet. Maybe it's so long and good it can serve as a preview. I don't know.
Break it up into multiple parts.
We haven't had a chance to really think about it yet, man.
At Lyman Jake, 100%. That is his Twitter. Okay, let's dive into some questions here on YouTube Live, and then we'll wrap things up. Let's get to some questions.
For the record, I still have the beanie on.
You do.
God, you made it.
I have stabilized.
Plus 14, so you were right. Gosh, Evan, he went even. You said over and under was 20, and he's made it 24.
I have been drinking a lot of water.
I can already tell you that Eric Fisher was commenting about that, and he said, I'm taking the under on 20 minutes and on 9.5. Oh. So you beat Eric Fisher. Let's get to some questions, though. Let's see.
I don't think it's especially hotter in here today than it normally is, too.
Eric Fisher asks, can Raheem Blackshear be the next Rodgers or Keen in the offense?
No. He's just different.
He's different. Those guys were blockers.
Right.
I mean, one was more fullback, one was more tight end, but it would be kind of a waste of Raheem Blackshear if you used him at that spot, in my opinion. Both those guys were the H-backs in Virginia Tech's offense, and he's not going to be an H-back.
As far as being a versatile player, I understand
like what he means. Like he's a versatile guy. Like I don't, if I made up a depth chart for Virginia Tech tomorrow, I don't know. I wouldn't even like put him at running back or wide receiver. I'd be like X. In fantasy football, you get your flex.
Ah, yeah, flex.
Yeah, he's the flex guy.
And also the utility man in baseball. You can put him anywhere.
Right, exactly.
Andrew McClung writes, if Virginia Tech wins this weekend against Miami, what is your final record prediction, vice versa, for a loss?
All right.
And I'll read out the schedule.
What's the rest of the schedule?
So the schedule goes, number 9 Miami at home this week, next week at Pittsburgh, and then hosting Clemson, and then hosting Virginia.
So our bye is before Clemson, right?
Yes.
So it's like, can't we get a bye week before someone we have a chance to beat?
Before UVA.
Before UVA or before Pitt.
Before Pitt, yeah.
Right, I mean, having a bye week before Clemson, it's just like, what's the point? all right, they've already got their loss out of the way. You think they're losing 2 games? We'd be better off. Honestly, you can't get away with this, because that's just not how coaches think, but we'd be better off if we just prepared for UVA.
Prepared for UVA.
Conceded the Clemson game.
Very interesting.
That would be better strategy. That's not how football coaches think.
Right.
Right? There's no football coach that would actually do that. But on paper, it would be better.
So the question is, if they beat Miami, what's your record prediction?
Okay, if they lose, what's your record prediction?
All right, so Miami would be the 5th win, right?
5-3.
Yeah, this would be 5-3. I think they'd go 7-4. Beat Pitt and Virginia and lose to Clemson.
I am going 6-5 no matter what.
6-5 no matter what.
So okay. you think they'll go 6-5? Well, that actually makes more sense, because I just picked them to basically do exactly what they're supposed to do over the last 3 games, right? What most people would think they should do. Let's say they'd be 4-4. If they lost, they'd be four and four. I think this team is either going to go 6-5 or 5-6. If they lose this week, let's count Clemson as a loss.
Right.
So that would come down to Pitt and UVA. I don't know where Pitt is mentally. Like, their best player just opted out.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a sign that the players might be.
They've lost 4 games in a row. Is that right?
They finally beat Florida State. But everybody does
right.
that.
Yeah.
So they've lost 4 games in a row.
Except
North Carolina. They've lost 4 games in a row to teams that pose a threat. So I'm
going 6-5.
I think Tech will beat Pitt. I don't think it'll be pretty. They'll lose to Clemson. And UVA, gosh, I don't know. UVA's 2-4, but they also beat
UNC.
Funny.
Yeah, I've seen. I thought UVA looked really good against UNC, but the games I saw them prior to that, I thought they looked slow.
Right.
And so it's weird.
Well, they look like a team filled with guys whose recruiting rankings were in the 70s, right? Which is what the level Bronco was recruiting at.
That is correct.
Right.
I have a feeling I know where you guys are going to go with this answer. Jacob Yates asks a question. I'm going to take what you said, Jacob, and rephrase it for Will and Chris.
You're going to remove the profanity?
No, there's no profanity. No. How can Justin Fuente win the fan base back?
Oh, gosh. He can't. He can take some short-term steps. He can keep the ball streak alive and get the cut back. Nobody expects to beat Clemson. I don't think anybody expects to beat Miami. But if we have good performances in the other 2 games, Pitt and UVA, and you keep the ball streak alive, I don't know whether he needs to make any assistant changes or not. And even if he did,
I don't think it'll matter.
I don't think. What kind of money are you going to have to spend on assistant coaches this year anyway?
We're talking about – I just
To me, the biggest thing he can do is in the off season. I'm actually going to write about this in the Q&A this week. So I'm consulting a strength and conditioning coach and some other people about it. I've asked some questions because I'm not really ready to give my answer yet. To me, the biggest thing is what he can do in the off season as far as complete player buy-in, getting everybody looking the part, looking like an ACC football team across the board. And that's the thing is we won't be able to tell that until the first game next year.
Yeah, what Chris is about to talk about, what I'm about to talk about, are things that happen over long periods of time. There's nothing he can do between now and the end of the season to, quote, because even if they go out there, there's been an interesting phrase in use this week. Words to the effect of beating Miami would show you just how bad the loss to Liberty was.
I wrote the last line of my article last week was, it wouldn't shock me if Tech went out and beat Miami next week. And, of course, that would make the Liberty loss even more frustrating.
You know, and so let's say he even goes out there and beats Clemson. You know, there is a portion of the fan base that's just going to roll their eyes and go, when's the next Liberty? When's the next ODU? Mm-hmm. When's the next Duke?
So, like, we have to perform more consistently. Like,
I would say through the end of next season.
Or maybe even longer than that. Who knows? Yeah. Because if you're going to lose games, like, lose to someone that the fan base feels like, okay, like, maybe you still even feel like you should have won the game, but you can understand the loss.
Well, the model is the UNC loss, where they played hard, they were outmanned, but you respected the effort and you understood that North Carolina was a good football team.
Right.
That day, anyway.
Yeah.
Florida State disagrees.
Good football team this year.
Yeah. I know we're running a little bit long, but we have some really good questions. It is a milestone podcast. Let's get a couple more in. Question: a really intriguing question, actually. This is from Michael. He asks, with ESPN issuing more layoffs in the last couple of weeks and the fact that ESPN has had to keep cutting costs over the last several years, do you see a future where ESPN doesn't broadcast college football, more importantly, Hokie football? Interesting question, because it's been really sad to see all the layoffs that have been happening. Some really talented people have been let go by ESPN. So I think that's a really interesting question. I'll go and jump. I don't know if I see a scenario, because college football brings in so much revenue.
Yeah, let me go
for ESPN.
First.
But
I think you'll see what you're already seeing, which is a doubling down on the SEC, the Big Ten, and Clemson. Mm-hmm. I think they will just squeeze everybody out to the point where that's all they talk about. They're kind of arguably already there. And I get it, man. I get the emails about their ratings, and it's always higher for Notre Dame, Clemson, SEC, and Big Ten.
Oh, they'll continue to, like, I mean, they're going to keep televising college football, especially those big teams. So, for like, Virginia Tech is, we'll have our ESPN games, but like, we're never going to be cut off from that network unless, like, something happens to the landscape of college football and there's a first division of football teams and we're not in that first division anymore.
Right.
That's the only scenario where I could see that playing out. ESPN will continue to cut employees and try to get cheap labor to save a buck, or so to speak. I mean, and I'm not criticizing for that, because I realize the financial pressures everybody is under these days. But that's just going to lead to more, oh, the UVA logo instead of Virginia Tech's logo on their graphics,
saying that Corey Moore went to UVA when they put a graphic.
Exactly, right. So they're going to, it's going to be some 19-year-old college intern who doesn't even know where Blacksburg is. And honestly, when he grew up in his most impressionable age, when he's maybe 13 years old, Virginia Tech was 6-6 and not very good at football. So he has no idea that Virginia Tech used to be good, intern. Yeah. So he shouldn't know, for example, that Corey Moore, you know, so it's like when you don't have professional people doing that and you turn to like interns or low paid employees, you're not going to get as good a quality. So expect more mistakes like that from ESPN, but expect the Virginia Tech broadcast to continue.
So let me tell you what you're going to see in Virginia Tech's schedule. You're going to see what you're seeing this year. They were on ABC against North Carolina because, you know, ESPN loves them some Mac Brown. The next ESPN,
ESPN against NC State, right? Or was that ACC Network?
That was ACC Network. That was prime time.
So the next one is they're playing Miami, so they're on ESPN too. They're going to play Clemson, so they'll be on ABC or ESPN. And so Virginia Tech's not the driver here anymore. The driver is, who are they playing? That's when they're going to show up on ESPN. Other than that,
Will, read me that list real quick again. You said how many games have been on the ACC Network real quick? Tell me off the top.
So ACC Network was NC State at 8 p.m., Duke at 4 p.m., Boston College at 8 p.m., Louisville at 4 p.m., and now Pitt at 4 p.m. on ACC Network. What is that, five games?
That's five.
We don't know the last two yet.
Yeah. The point I want to make real quick, and I'm curious what it's going to be on ESPN this week, but one thing you're seeing in the industry right now is a lot of the broadcasters are not at the stadiums this year. And I'm sure
That's correct.
Of that might be COVID-related and trying to keep the broadcasters safe. But, you know, you watch the primetime ACC Network, they're doing that, you know, from their living rooms, and it's over Zoom. And so you wonder if that's a model moving forward, even after COVID. Will we see that ESPN and other networks maybe trying and save money and not sending as many teams, broadcast teams there?
Honestly, I know this isn't true from a money standpoint of the money coming in, but like, I think college football is overcovered. Like, I feel overwhelmed by it sometimes. It's just like they talk about the same thing. Like, how many times can you talk about Trevor Lawrence or the same subjects over and over and over again? And that's what they do. So like, I've blocked it out, and I don't even watch ESPN anymore because of that. So I don't know. I think they'll continue to do stuff like that. Bill Roth was at the Florida-Georgia game this past week.
Called it on Westwood One.
Speaking of people attending games and things like that. So I don't think ESPN will do that unless it's for their lower-level broadcasts, like their ESPNU broadcasts and stuff like that, maybe. But I don't think you'll ever see a primetime ESPN game where it's Auburn versus LSU and the announcers are calling the game from their couch.
So we could actually talk about this stuff for a whole podcast, but part of what's making this possible is the implementation of the SEC Network and the ACC Network. All the schools have built up their broadcast capability, so you can now just utilize their cameras and production capability.
Correct.
And so I'm sitting here thinking as we're talking, if Mark Herzlick is going to be doing ACC Network games from his living room, then I think what ESPN needs to do is go into Herzlick's house or his garage or whatever and set up about eight monitors with all the different views so that Herzlick is not watching the same camera angle we're watching and saying things that we can see with our own eyes. He has to be able to look at all of it,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
So maybe that's an evolution that you'll see. So far, I believe the sideline reporters have been in the stadium.
It's not worth the risk. And I'll give you an example of like, I've got a friend that works for NASCAR, a friend I went to college with, and she produces shows. And at one point, and this was before COVID, when NASCAR was cutting back expenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were televising a race. I don't know what level it was. But they weren't sending, to save expenses, they weren't sending announcers on the road. So the announcers were calling the game from the studio. And so she was filming them, you know, while they're calling the race that they're watching on television in the studio, right? Well, and just like that, the feed goes out. So they can't see it anymore. so the people at home are watching the race on television, and then the announcers are like trying to call it, and they're like,
oopsie.
We guess this guy's still in the lead, you know? So if stuff like that happens, I mean, it will happen at some point, and they'll look stupid when it does.
Yeah, well.
Okay, I wanted to get to 227. You know why? Because that officially puts it as the longest podcast we've ever done. So on the milestone,
really?
Just I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
I might need to go back.
Jeff Holland listens to these things, and the one Jeff and I did was over 2 hours.
Actually, you're right about that. And Jeff Holland commented in the beginning of the show when we were talking about Tech Sideline and the evolution of the podcast. He commented, Jeff Holland, TSL podcast number 54 is probably their best one. With a smiley face.
A couple of other
fun notes in the chats, by the way. Eric Fisher in all caps, spurtles and tack shavers for everyone with an exclamation point.
You get a spurtle.
There were a bunch of people.
Hey, Evan, look under your seat. There's not a spurtle under your seat.
It's the Oprah Winfrey show instead of everyone gets. And there was a lot of people asking about gear. Someone asked, is there a Tech Sideline Christmas ornament? People asking about polos and shirts. And so anyways,
there should be a lot of comments about
the Tech Sideline.
Okay, so
you're going to get everybody in the company a freaking spurtle for Christmas, aren't you?
With the Tech Sideline logo on it. So we're transitioning from an apparel and merchandise store that we had hosted by K2 Awards in Richmond to a new store, which will be apparel only. And I don't have a deadline for launching that. I'm kind of busy, but this Under Armour polo that I'm wearing right now is off of the new store, and we're actually going to have some women's apparel, you know, specifically designed for women, not just, hey, go buy a guy's t-shirt. So we got something new coming. Awesome. And I guess I need to roll that out before Christmas if people want gifts.
Well, anyways, thanks to everybody for chiming in. Thanks, you guys, for staying on the set a little bit longer. Great. Literally the last two podcasts we've had some excellent questions, so appreciate everybody chiming in. All right, well, 150 podcasts down and 150 more to go. A great Tech Sideline podcast. So we've got our new sign up on the set today. We've got the new music. We got a lot of things going right now here at TSL, and that'll wrap things up. Normal week of content. Tomorrow we've got a Friday Q&A from Chris Coleman.
I've already started on it, man. I got an early start this week.
He's ahead.
Look at that. Well, I hope you guys enjoy your weekend.
To put context in the Q&A, I go all the way back to Frank Beamer's book, Turn Up the Wick, which came out in the 2000 in the year 2000 for research. So there's going to be a lot of perspective in this week's Q&A.
And so one thing I would recommend is check out Brandon Patterson's review of the Liberty game. Brandon is just really good at calmly explaining things. And we have sat here and talked about how Virginia Tech didn't have a spring to go through to learn their defense and implement a new defensive scheme. But there was something about the way Brandon said it. He said, if you look around college football and you look at teams that had coaching changes, didn't get to go through any spring practice, and they were hit hard by COVID early, you know, there weren't many of them. Virginia Tech is one of them.
The LSU defense. They changed coordinators in the offseason and didn't get a chance to practice whatever in the spring, and now they can't stop anybody.
And they got lit up by a Mississippi State team that can't score against anybody
else. And that's Bo Pelini. Like, we know Bo Pelini's an elite defensive coach. Yeah. We know it. So
Brandon he puts things in perspective and is a calming, analytical voice, which – even though Chris and I try to be as analytical as possible, it's difficult because we are subjected to the raw blast of emotion on Twitter and the message boards for days following a loss.
It's kind of hard to separate yourself from that.
He does a good job
separating. He does a really good job of that. And, you know, I will point out, and we haven't pointed this out since the beginning of the season, but, you know, at one point Virginia Tech's defensive line coach this year was Jared Hewitt.
Yeah.
I mean, how good do you really expect him to be when for part of the preseason a coach or a player is coaching the defensive line?
Yeah.
Right? So
anyway, let's go.
That'll wrap things up. Milestone Podcast, episode 150. Thanks for being a part of it, and we look forward to many great podcasts moving forward. That'll wrap things up for our managing editor, Chris Coleman, our founder and general manager, who wore
the beanie
over 40 minutes, Will Stewart, the best podcast producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart. My name is Evan Hughes, saying so long. Thanks so much for watching and listening to episode 150 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you on Monday morning at 10 a.m.